All right. Thanks for being here. Sorry I'm a little bit, a few minutes tardy. But we finished up our draft prep on Friday. Very good process. I can't say enough about the great job Scott McEwen did setting our draft board, and our coaches got very involved and really bought into what we're doing here. They did a lot of work, and obviously our area scouts have been working on this draft since going back to last summer. So it was good preparation, you know. I think the teams that draft well, you know, it's not really about what you do on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's about what you do leading up to it. And our preparation to this point has been outstanding, you know. I should also mention Brian Zanders and Lance Newmark have done a great job with our eighth round working on that. So we're in a good spot right now. We feel good about things. Preparation's been very good, and we're ready to go. Before I get started, I want to address a couple things. First, our needs, because you guys always ask that question. And somebody wastes the question on that, and they could have asked a different question because I say the same thing every time. But it's the same as always. We need good football players. You know, we need guys to help us win football games. Doesn't matter what position those guys play, you know. If you're talking about secondary-wise and we drafted a player in the secondary, I think everybody would agree that would be a good decision right there. We take a linebacker, outside backer, I think that makes sense. Defensive line, we can improve our depth there. The offensive line, we can improve our depth there. Tight end makes sense. Another quarterback to compete for backup quarterback would be a good spot. Running back depth is always important, and obviously receiver. So we need all those things. We could also use a kicker, I think, be another one, you know. But, you know, besides a punter and a long snapper, we're open to taking just about any position. So it's not really going to be an issue for us as far as the draft. And secondly, Ndamukong Suh. So somebody might say, nobody waste the question on Ndamukong Suh. I'm going to address that now. We're not looking to trade him. We have no plans to trade him. I haven't had any conversation with anybody about trading him, except in January I did get a call from a team that had an interest, offered me a box of old tube socks, and I said, no, thank you. Other than that, there's been no conversation. There's been no gauging the interest level. There's been none of that that's happened or has been authorized by me. So I don't know where that came from. That's not on the table. There are a lot of scenarios you can create where that might make sense to try to do something with him. And you can think through all that stuff. And, you know, at the bottom line is winning football games, right? I mean, we're here to win football games. That's the guy that helps us do that. So I'm planning on Ndamukong being with us. And now I'll take any questions.
You stay where you are at 10. Is it as simple as you have a top 10 players on the board, and when your pick rolls around, whichever one of those is the highest, that's the guy you take because your work's already done?
Well, no. It's not that simple. We'll come up with our top 10. So, you know, we've got our draft board set as of right now. We've got them lined up pretty good. But, you know, we're going to take some quarterbacks out of that mix, you know. Some other guys might not fit for other reasons, health reasons or otherwise. Those guys will come out of that mix too, and then we'll have our top 10, and then it will get pretty simple.
Just to follow from that, from your top 10 that you come up with for your fit, your franchise, you'll go strictly whoever the top guy is on your list going into the draft right now, that's who you take.
Right. I mean, if we're picking fifth, we'd have five names. We had five names last year. We have 10 names this year, and it'll be pretty simple.
Art, if I could waste one question. What about the contract situation? Where does that stand?
You know, we're in negotiations. You know, I don't think it really benefits to try to gauge where you are. Are you close? Are you far? And all that. I've done this for a while now, and, you know, you can say you're close. You're not close till everybody signs it. You can say you're not going to get it done. You're not going to get it done until the time passes for you to get it done, you know. So we're in ongoing negotiations, and we don't do that through the media. It's a dialogue between Tom Lewan and his agent, Jimmy Sexton, and we're moving forward with that.
Just one other question. Are you bothered that he's not here, though? I mean, that he's been the only guy who really hasn't shown up?
Well, you know, I mean, I don't want to take the company line, but the reality is it's voluntary. The league office has been very clear about the fact that no general manager, front office executive, or coach is to imply that it's not voluntary. And I'm not going to imply that it is or isn't voluntary. I can tell you this. The routine that he's on right now, where he'll be here hopefully sometime in mid-May, is a routine he's been on for the last three seasons. And, you know, he's performed pretty well the last three seasons. So it doesn't shock me that he's not here. And I'll leave it at that.
You've implied an interest in trading down or trading up if the fit is right. Have you had any preliminary conversations with other GMs?
Yeah, I started that process really today, full-fledged started that process. And I've had dialogue with teams ahead of us and behind us. And we always do that. You know, we always explore moving both ways and, you know, try to find the best value that way, whether it's going up or going back. And we're open to staying at 10, open to moving up, or open to moving back right now. So we evaluate all those opportunities.
How high can you reasonably go up and without giving up too much, and how low can you reasonably go back without, you know, missing out on one of your top 10 guys or whatever?
Well, you know, wherever we are, if we're picking 22nd, we have a point we would go up to, you know. If we're picking second, we have a point we would go back to. And we say, when we get past this point, we're not getting the quality of player that we really want to get. So we always have, you know, that range, and we have that range now.
Right. Is there more quality depth, though, in the mid-rounds, middle of this first round than maybe a year ago, more bigger selection of players at some positions?
There's a lot of depth in this draft, not just in that area, but, you know, going back to round two, you know, round three, there are going to be some really good football players there to be taken. So, and we're excited about this process. It's going to make our football team a lot better. I mean, we're always excited about the draft, but it's going to make our football team a lot better, I think.
Sorry, is that a byproduct of the 98 juniors, really? And the guys that you get, because they push that talent down, I mean, are the grades that you're going to get on guys in the third and fourth round probably going to be higher than the grades on those guys last year or the previous year?
Yeah, I don't really want to comment on the juniors coming out. I know that's really a topic I should be commenting on. But the depth is there. There are a lot of really good players there. And I would agree with you. The grades are higher, longer into the process this year.
At cornerback, can you give us an update on Chris Houston and what qualities do you look for when you're looking at a cornerback? Obviously, a position you know well. What kind of things jump out at you on tape or when you're talking to them or measuring anything you can?
Yeah, well, Chris has a medical issue dealing back to last year. He dealt with it during the season last year. He's still dealing with it, trying to find the right treatment plan for him right now. And then as far as corners, I think I said before, the most important thing to me is competitiveness. You know, you got to have that guy that doesn't want anybody catching any balls on him ever, in practice, in walkthrough, whatever. And we're looking for a guy that has that kind of mentality. You know, a lot of them have different physical attributes, but the mentality is the most important thing at corner, I think.
Is surgery a possibility for Chris Houston?
I wouldn't rule that out, but I don't really know right now.
You did say back in February that you were confident Chris would return to form. Jim Caldwell was a little less confident about that. How have your views changed on that?
Yeah, you know, I think the longer it goes, and I think the more concerns you get. You know, something happened back in August, November, you know, that we're still dealing with. So there's a concern there, you know. But, we'll see what happens.
We saw sort of what you liked in Golden Tate, you know, with the versatility and the good hands. What are some qualities that you'll look for in a receiver in the draft?
Obviously, you know, good hands, you know. I think that's really important. It kind of goes without saying, you know. But you'd be amazed that, you know, you watch tape, combine tape of guys, and they can't catch, you know. It's kind of a problem if you're going to be a receiver, you know. So I think that's pretty important. Obviously, a guy, it depends on what you're going to use him for, but guys with speed, you know, excite us because a guy that can make a 5-yard play into a 90-yard play, you know, is something you want to have those kind of guys on your football team. But those things are, you know, probably two of the most important qualities right now. Some guys are slot guys. Some guys do different things, but that's what I'm looking for.
And throughout this pre-draft process, you were spotted at several pro days and, you know, had some meals with some of the guys. What do you sort of get out of, you know, going down there and seeing these guys in person and talking to them?
Well, it's great to get on their campuses, first of all, talk to them, but also talk to coaches face-to-face and ask coaches about these players and other players who are involved with them, other contacts that you might have at different schools. I mean, that's a really important part of the process. You know, as far as the meal, sometimes it's better to be having a meal with a player than sitting in the airport for 3 hours waiting on your flight, you know. So, you know, we do that sometimes. Sometimes we don't do it.
How many quarterbacks do you think will come off the board in the top nine? How helpful would that be for you?
Well, that's the second part. First, it'd be very helpful for us. You know, we really want – I'd like to see 6 or 7 quarterbacks go, you know, in the top 10. One thing I learned a long time ago – the first part of the question, how many quarterbacks are going to go, is that nobody knows. And that, you know, people act like they know and they write what they know is going to happen. And something weird happens every draft. Something different happens. And every different move is a chain reaction going down, you know. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm excited to find out. And like I said before, you know, it's about preparation. So we will be prepared for every scenario. If no quarterbacks go, we'll have 10 names. If 4 quarterbacks go, we'll know who our guy is at 10, you know. And I think that's the most important part of the process.
Well, a lot of draft experts seem to think that you guys are enamored with Sammy Watkins, the receiver. Have you, without saying whether or not you are, but where is that coming from? Need, or are you enamored with Sammy Watkins?
Well, all the players that are really, really good, I'm enamored with all of those guys, you know, and the ones that aren't so good, I'm not that enamored, you know. So Sammy's a very talented guy. He would fit us. He can make plays. His track record speaks for itself, I think. So we like him as a football player, so we did our due diligence on him, you know, as we've done on Clowney and other guys.
When you say 10 players, are you talking about your 10, or are you talking about the first 10 off the board?
Our 10. We'll have our 10 no matter what happens, no matter what scenario, we'll have our 10. And we'll know who our guy is, you know, no matter how many quarterbacks come off.
So there might be no quarterbacks in that 10, in other words. It's just
we have a 10 with no quarterbacks in it.
Martin, some people characterize drafts as need, some best player available. Would you characterize this draft for you and your top pick as one or the other of those?
I think our philosophy and my philosophy is pretty constant and pretty consistent. You know, we'll take the best player available for us. And that's what we've done, you know, here in the past, and we'll continue to follow that formula, you know. So we're not going to reach for need. And when I say reach for need, I mean if you've got, you know, three or four guys that are similarly graded that you know, you can take that will come and play for you and contribute something, I don't think you reach down nine spots to take somebody because they play a particular position. So that's what I'm saying. It's not necessarily the numerical grade is one tick above the next numerical grade, so you take that guy even though he's not going to be able to get on the field for you, you know. So we have a pretty consistent philosophy, and we're going to stick with it.
You mentioned the possibility of taking a quarterback. Can you sort of weigh the value of taking someone who resembles Matthew Stafford physically versus, you know, taking maybe a more athletic guy who will help you prepare for, you know, other athletic quarterbacks in the league?
Yeah, I think that'd be a good question for coaches. How do you plan on using those guys? And we'll discuss that at the appropriate time. I'm always looking for the best quality player. You know, I like guys that can throw the ball. I mean, that's the way I grew up in the NFL and in college football. So guys that can sling it are guys that appeal to me. I like the athletic guy. Teams are doing some interesting things with the athletic guys. If you can find an athletic guy that can sling it too, I really would really like that guy, you know. But the coaching staff would know how we're going to utilize guys. And when we're on the board, during the draft, before we're on the clock, we talk about our options and how we would use these guys. If this guy is here, what's your plan for him? And that's the question that I'll ask the coordinator, ask the head coach. And so we have time to formulate some of those thoughts. We know where we've graded them talent-wise, but there may be a guy with a tick higher grade, but we don't have a solid plan for him. You know, and you take the grade and take the guy below that, I think. So
many times with the draft you hear, you know, coach wanted this guy, GM wanted this guy, the owner wanted this guy. How much conversation have you had with this new staff in getting, you know, staying, you know, one pick where everybody wants this guy and there's no dissension?
Yeah, you know, that's what the draft process is for us, and that's the grading process. Where our coaches are involved every step of the way. So we're in the draft room, and, you know, we've got number of grades on guys. I may have one. Scotty may have one. The offense coordinator has one. The receiver coach has one. Scott will put a grade on that player based off the room, you know. And so we'll put a group grade on them, and we'll get a feel for what the coaches plan on doing with them. And that's the way that we go about it. Ultimately, it's my decision who we take. So we won't hear coach wanted this guy, this guy wanted. It doesn't matter because I have to decide who it is, and my name gets attached to that guy, which I found that out. You know, no matter who that guy is, that's the guy I drafted. It's not the guy somebody else drafted. So, you know, we'll make sure we draft the right players and guys that I like.
In what ways is the process up to this point different than it was 2 years ago or 4 years ago, 6 years ago here in your estimation?
Wow, it's changed a lot. I mean, we've changed a lot from the way we did things in the past. You know, I would start with the database that we put in place last year has been very helpful in terms of consolidating information and having information in one place. We're back in the dark ages technology-wise, I think. We've changed some areas and some responsibilities. You know, we've gotten some other people involved in the process. Sheldon White's very involved in the process. Shaq Harris has been very involved. We've changed some roles. We changed some of our grading, how we've graded the medical grades, for example. We've changed that process around. We have a new doctor. Michael Workings joined us a couple of years ago. It was part of that plan. So there have been a lot of changes, and that's really what the goal is, I think. The goal is to continually improve the process every year and make it a little bit better, you know, and that's what we've been trying to do every single year. So there have been a lot of changes over the years.
did this additional 2 weeks mean for you? Was it beneficial? Would you prefer to go back to how it was before?
Well, I think this year is kind of unique from my standpoint because we didn't have a head coach for a period of time there. So I was focused on finding a head coach. So when I would have been spending time evaluating juniors, I was out looking for head coach. It has kind of benefited me some this year in terms of having time to evaluate, more time to evaluate players. But I think the timing of it is what it is, you know. I mean, whatever time they want to do, if they say draft players, I'm going to be there to draft players, you know. I don't know that it really makes that much difference, whether it's 2 weeks ago or whether it's now. Obviously, there's a lot more analysis, a lot more articles are written, a lot more time to kill, you know. But I think the important thing is being ready, and we're always going to be ready.
Could that extra 2 weeks, lead you to talk yourself out of a guy?
Me?
I'm just saying in general.
Yeah. Not me. I can't speak for somebody else, but for you. Not for me, no.
In terms of being prepared, how much time do you spend trying to figure out what teams, other teams in particular, in front of you in the top 10 try to do?
Yeah, I think you got to do that. I think you spend some time on that, and you talk to people around the league and other GMs who you have a good relationship with. And try to decipher that. But I think the most important thing is you're prepared for every scenario. You're ready for whatever might happen. And that's, you know, because like I said before, you don't know what's going to happen. And
I can trust?
None. But you can listen to what they say, though. It's a very competitive business. Hey, we're all trying to win, you know, so I understand that. But no, there's not a whole lot of, yeah.
Much time or effort and smoke screens and
do I try to do that? Yeah, No, I don't really.
Why not?
I think I can spend my time in more valuable ways, watching tape, evaluating players, you know, talking to our coaching staff, our new coaching staff here, getting a feel for what those guys are trying to find. There are better ways for me to use my time than that. So I don't spend time on that.
How much value do you put in a player's special teams ability, especially with kind of the lessened impact of, you know, the kicking game in some regard?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we really emphasized more this year, speaking to changes that you asked the question before. When we were doing some of the later round free agent guys, I had the area scouts flag guys they thought were going to be really good special teams players. In the past, we kind of relied on measurables, guys' height, weight, speed, you know, if he was a physical player, if he could operate in space. And you sort of, some guys didn't play a lot of teams, but you say, well, this guy could probably play teams, you know. But we found out a lot of times we were giving guys, Bonnell didn't want some of those guys, you know. We're saying this guy can play teams and maybe, you know, Bonnell wanted a guy who actually played teams, or Danny Crossman, or whoever the team's coach was at the time, you know. So, we actually spent more time delving into some of those later-round guys who play on special teams, who play four phases, and trying to locate some of those guys later in the draft or in free agency this year.
How about early in the draft, there's a few prominent prospects who have return ability. How much does that factor in?
It factors in. I mean, it factors in more when you don't have a competent returner, which we do, you know. So, but it certainly is something to take into consideration that somebody can be a backup punt returner. He has more versatility. You can only dress, you know, 46 players. So, you know, you want to have guys that can play multiple spots. So it factors in.
How much difficult is it to evaluate the juniors versus the seniors?
It's just a matter of time. You know, the seniors you've seen, you've been on those guys since, you know, July, August, you know, going back actually to the Blesto meetings in May. You've been on the seniors since May. So you've done a lot of background research, character research, you know, you're ready for those guys to come out. Whereas the juniors announced in January, and you have a short amount of time to do a lot of the background and to get more eyes on them. So that's the only challenge.
Martin, you've never been reluctant to trade up or down in any draft. Does this draft, do you think, lend itself to a level of aggressiveness because there are some elite players or there's a lot of depth? Could you see it being... lend itself to more aggressiveness?
No, I don't think you get any more or less aggressive. I think if there's a guy that you really want ahead of you, you can get him. You know, he's in that range that we talked about. You can go up and get him. You go up and get him, you know. But you know that there's some guys that you have graded well behind you. But how good are those guys when you actually get them, you know? I mean, so that's how you view them now, you may view them totally differently 3 or 4 months into having them. Or some of these guys that we had rated really high last year, that went to other teams did not perform as well. So it's all, it's a process of trying to decipher how good these guys are going to be. And so you want to be, I don't think your aggressiveness level changes based on the depth of the draft.
How deep is it? Do you prefer quality over quantity, whether it's blue chips over, you know, red chips or whatever?
It depends how much those blue chips cost, you know. If they cost too much, I'd rather have a couple red chips. So it's about getting value, I think, whether you move up and get value or move back and get value. So that's the way I look at it.
It's not a stretch to say that the draft is the most important element of team building, I would think. How do you quantitatively evaluate drafts from the past? I mean, what is a benchmark for a successful draft, looking back at after you've done this now for several years?
Well, we go into every draft, really, and we talk about this in our personnel meetings. We want to find three starters in every draft. We want to find three guys that contribute in every draft and three developmental guys. So that's our goal going into every draft. It's been that way since 2009 when I first got here. That's what we seek to achieve. It's an aspirational goal. You don't always hit on it. Sometimes you hit a little bit better, you know, so it just varies.
Is when evaluating need, Martin, is corner a challenge any more than others because you have a number of young players there that you clearly like, but they also haven't played a lot of football for you, so you're trying to project where they're going to be and how significant your need is there?
Yeah, those guys that you're talking about in Bentley and Greenwood and Jonte Green, Slay, I think the important thing is, are they on the right trajectory? You know, are they showing progress every single year? Are they improving? You know, some guys walk in from day one and they got it, you know, and they just step on the field and they've got it. Some guys take a year. Some guys take 2 years. It doesn't take more than 3 years, you know what I mean? It doesn't. If you don't have it in 3 years, you don't have it, you know. So this is a big year for those guys, I think. It's a big year to see where they are. I like what I've seen thus far, but we haven't seen a whole lot. But those guys should develop and should be good players for us.
How do you compare the uncertainty in the top 10 this year compared to past years? Is it more uncertain, or is it always as much of a crapshoot?
As I said before, I think it's always uncertain. I think you never know what's going to happen. You can try to figure it out, but you just don't know. People are looking for different things in these players. You know, some guys, you know, if you're running 3-4 and you're two-gapping every time, you like a lineman that we don't like. You know, if you're playing a lot of zone, you're tackling, your corners are playing cover two, you're like a corner that we might not like, you know. So, and then, as you know, nobody tells you what they're looking for or what they're going to do. So every year it's uncertain. I don't think it's any more or less uncertain this year.
A couple more for Mark.
A couple years ago you talked about relying on Jabba Fest was your biggest regret of that season.
Mm-hmm.
With Brian Broyles this year, can you rely or count on him in any way?
I believe in Ryan, and he's one of the hardest working guys I've ever seen in terms of rehab, practice. He's just outstanding. I'll tell you a quick story. He was, I think it was last year, and the guys have a rehab schedule. The men have a rehab schedule. And he had a thing in his schedule. He was going to be out for a week or so. And unlike anybody ever before that, he called me and said, "Hey, I'm going to be in Haiti on a mission trip. For this, is it okay for me to go and do this, or should I stay here and rehab?" You know, so that's Ryan Broyles in a nutshell. You know, so I believe in him. You know, I'm not going to build the whole offense around him, obviously, but I believe in that kid and that man, rather.
With where your team sits right now, obviously after a couple of disappointing years, there is maybe more of an urgency to win more quickly. Would you be looking for players that could give an immediate impact more so than projects in every level of the draft in every round? In other words, if a guy's coming off an injury or something like that, maybe you'd be less interested. You need immediate impact.
I'm not so sure I agree with your first premise that there's a need to win more this year than any other year. There's a need to win all the time, you know, and so that doesn't at all affect who we're going to try to draft. Again, as I said before, the draft is not for the first game of the season. You know, it's not for the middle of the season. It's for the future of the franchise, you know. And we're going to draft the best players for the future of this organization without regard to anything else.
Martin, the way the CBA is structured, is there more value to move back into the first round now, late in the first round, because you get that extra fifth year on guys if you so choose, and maybe mm-hmm. there's the thought you can hang on to guys longer. Is there any more increased value than that?
That's probably offset by the fact that the players at the front don't cost as much as they used to, you know. So, I mean, it depends on what's important to you.
You mentioned at the start just the needs at defensive line a little bit or on the edge rushers. How deep is that class of edge rushers, and how acute is your need there?
Yeah, like I said, we need everything. Nothing's more acute than anything else. There's some good players that can rush the passer. It's about the one that you get, though, isn't it? I mean, we can talk about how deep it is, but if they all go in a run in the second round, It really doesn't matter, you know. It's about locating a guy. If you can locate a guy that can impact and help you, whether it's in the, you know, fourth round, sixth round, seventh round, free agent, then you want to locate that guy. And that guy can play for you. So we're trying to locate that guy right now.
Is it more important now, with the passing game is changing a lot of things, is it more important to have an impactful safety than it is having an impactful corner?
I don't know. I think that, you know, like I said, it's a sliding scale on a lot of those questions, you know. How bad is that corner, you know? Does he really, really stink? Because if you got good safety in the corner and can't play at all, it doesn't help you, and vice versa.
Corners, you know, yeah. There's only so much they can do in coverage. That a lot of teams now are thinking, if I can get a safety who can play deep but also help on the run, he might be more impactful.
Well, coverage is a different question. If you're saying, is it more important to have safeties that can cover, that have man coverage ability, and I would agree with that for sure. But there's some safeties that maybe they're not great coverage guys, you know, but they're tone setters, you know, in the secondary. You know, Seattle has one. You know, he's a solid coverage guy, but he's a phenomenal run defender, and he sets the tone back there, and he makes people afraid to run around back there, you know. That has value too, you know. I do think that the emphasis on spreading things out and offensive, passing games exploding the way they are right now, it's important to have safeties with coverage ability. I would agree with that.
Hey,
all right.
Just for clarification's sake.
Thank you.